Hello, everyone. I'm Eric D'Souza, and you are listening to Crime Writers of Canada's podcast, where we discuss all things crime fiction with crime writing authors from coast to coast. Joining me today from a remote and interesting location is Yvonne Maximchuk. Hi, Yvonne. How are you today?
Oh, pretty good. Not bad. Thank you, Eric. How are you?
I'm good, too. We had to work out a few technical difficulties. We're going to apologize at the beginning. The audio is not 100% crisp, but we're going to talk about setting, and I'm sure all of you listeners will be just happy to be actually listening to Yvonne, because we had to work a few things out, and we're doing things a little different today. So let's start with a bio. Yvonne has been working as an artist her entire life. She paints expressive watercolors, acrylic on canvas, and creates porcelain dinnerware. The artist became an author with the publication of Full Moon Flood Tide, co-written with her neighbor, Bill Proctor, and published by Harbor Publishing in 2003. Since then, she's written several other books, including a coloring book, Color the British Columbia Coast, which was a smash hit up to and during COVID. Her most recent writing venture is a mystery novel. Drawn from the 40 years of her life experience as a homesteader and mariner on the Broughton Archipelago, Murder Rides a Gale Force Wind is the first in the Island Mystery series. I'm going to say it more than once, but I really would recommend all of you to go check out her website, YvonneMaximchuk.com. We'll have the spelling, obviously, in the details. Because not only can you see her writing, but it's the best way to see some of her art, which is beautiful. And it very much highlights the BC coast. Yvonne, I always sort of put everybody in two different categories, or not everybody, writers in two different categories. Some writers don't think setting is that important. Their story can take place in almost any small community or any city. Others, the setting almost is a major character. It's integral to your story. And I know you're part of the latter. So maybe let's start this interview by describing Echo Bay.
Oh, Echo Bay. It feels far, far away from just about everywhere. I thought when I moved here, I would be going to the, you know, complete and total wilderness. However, almost people from almost every country in the world have arrived here at Echo Bay. So it's kind of like a magnetic place. Physically, it is being affected by the impact of climate change, like everywhere. However, it's basically, if you picture a number of islands of various sizes crowned with trees of all, you know, conifers and alders and wildflowers in May, an abundance of wildlife, bears, cougars, raccoons, otters, birds, many, many birds. It's a place that just feels, ancient and beautiful and untouched, in spite of the facts. And living here has been the gift of my life.
And it's also where you write about, right?
Yes. Yeah, I couldn't help that. You know, all the advice I ever heard about writing was write what you know. And the thing I know best is where I live. I pay attention. My senses can expand. They're not overwhelmed by, you know, the stimulation of what we see and hear and encounter in cities. Yeah, I can hear for miles out on the water. I can hear whales 5 miles away. I can hear a hummingbird. I can hear the call of a bird. The air is sweet and clean. The water is sweet and clean. That, I guess, is the prime beauty of living here.
Being a fellow BCer, I still had to look up the location of Echo Bay. So can you tell us geographically around where it is?
If you drive up to Port McNeill on Vancouver Island, then you must take a boat or a plane or a helicopter, and you go due east past Malcolm Island, where Sointula is, and Cormorant Island, where Alert Bay is. You go past those islands towards Guildford Island across Queen Charlotte Strait. And then you're in an area of islands and inlets called the Broughton Archipelago. not quite to the mainland, but actually Guilford Island is encircled by mainland land. You know, that's where the cougars and grizzly bears come from.
Yeah, I would encourage everyone, because I had to look it up. And it's about as remote as you can be. I think Canada's got a lot of remote locations, but you're pretty far up there, aren't you?
Yeah, well, there's a lot more further up there and a lot more further north. But actually, considering where we are and the accessibility issues, people that have boats get here. Kayakers get here. People rowing get here. That's quite amazing.
A lot of people who write about locations as your own, like we often, mystery writers, we would write a cozy novel. And a cozy novel typically has an idyllic location like Echo Bay. But also the community is very idyllic. But you mentioned even in your blurb that in your story, it's a little bit different. It's a little bit more maybe real. To quote you, it says, "The residents of the loose-knit coastal community of Echo Bay struggle with the same issues as the world at large. Drugs, mental health, racial friction, sexism, you name it. But everyone signs on the code. Whether you like them or not, you always help someone in need." I got that feel from the book already, just starting it. Why was it important for you to, I guess, show it in a realistic emotion, not the typical cozy way?
I didn't start out to write a cozy novel or mystery novel. That actually wasn't my intention. I didn't think of genres before I started it. As a painter, I don't think of genres, but I'm pretty literal. You know, I like to play with color and form and, you know, be inventive and creative and do what I call non-representational work, which is basically abstract. So making up an entire location and characters and just writing a cozy novel didn't really interest me. I am infinitely and unendingly intrigued by the vagaries of human nature as it's expressed in a small community. And people have a lot more room to just really become who they are. And every action and interaction shows up, you know, it's quite visible in spite of my belief that we only really get to see 10% of what's going on. And it takes years to look back and piece things together. So, I don't know, it seemed like the right number of characters. I had an ensemble cast of some interesting and strong women and some competent and complex men. Yeah, men and women. And unfortunately, in our community, there's no children. So you mentioned the word series, which was not my initial idea, but that does seem to be something that people are asking for. But I think I'm going to bring some children into the next one just to explore that. We once had children here. But it's like painting. I paint what I see, what I live in, because it fascinates my mind. I cannot think of anything more beautiful and interesting and complex than what the world is. And so the people in that world fit into that category for me.
If the history of Echo Bay is the same as what you wrote about, didn't the school burn down? Is that one of the reasons you don't have children?
No, the children outaged the community, coastal communities, many communities. As you probably know, you know, more people now live in cities than they do rurally, right? And that was not the case until recently. So, yeah, young people moved to larger communities for work, for economic health, and there's not so much resource extraction, such as logging and trapping and fishing. All of these resource and converting efforts are challenged in various ways. So people leave small communities. So all of the families that had children, they outaged the grade 7 limit on our one-room school. And the school board was amazing for our community for years. They kept it open for five children. but after 10 years of not being used, yes, finally it was all taken down, taken apart, and we were invited to salvage, or buy affordably everything that was there before they burned it.
You've written other books before, including a coloring book, which I find fascinating. But why did you decide now to write a mystery?
Well, it just came to me. It's like a painting idea again. You know, something comes into my mind, and it's informed by a huge number of influences and, you know, tiny little facets of a, I don't know, crystal or something. So the same thing happened in my mind. I just had this idea, you know, what would happen if one of your neighbors washed up on an island? It was stimulated actually years ago when my husband used to live on his fishing boat. We would call each other on VHF radio, and this actually passed for not necessarily entertainment all the time, but information/entertainment. And one night, someone phoned the Coast Guard and said that a dead body was floating beside their boat when they were tied up somewhere in some lonely place by a rickety dock. And I never forgot that, you know. So that was one of the core ideas, was what would the neighbors do? What would the people here do if someone they knew washed up on an island? And it's entirely fiction, which is, you know, novel, mystery. But people do, they really do try to figure out everything here. If you live here, somebody in a boat you don't know goes by, like, you're like, who is that? What are they doing here? Where are they going? It's just part of the scene. We don't sit around watching TV or spending much time on the phones.
One thing I'm picking up fairly quickly, I guess, is you call it an island mystery as opposed to a Caroline mystery. I can sense like sort of Louise Penny's Three Pines, that she talks the viewpoint of many members of that community, but it eventually becomes a Maugham Ghamesh mystery. I'm not seeing a central character sort of peek out. It really does seem to be a mixed bag of characters. Is it going to stay that way?
I would say yes. And I'll tell you why, because I think I'm a bit of a rebel, you know, and if there's a certain way that everybody does something, you know, I know that we like to compartmentalize and have cozy mysteries and, you know, the genre, it's like TV. You watch the same thing and after 25 years or reading for 50 years, I can pick out a theme so easily. And those are the themes, you know, you have a central character who is the point of view, or that central character remains who drives the story, who solves the story. And that's not my life experience. You know, my life experience is that everybody here has a role to play and they function in that community in a certain way. And they have their skill set and their talents. And you know who you can call on to help you in certain arenas. When people work together, different kinds of things happen. So that's what I wanted to explore. So I thought that calling it an island mystery would be better than, you know, I could kind of pick that as my genre and say, this is an island or an islander's mystery.
It's a very interesting concept. I guess another thing I'm picking up on is the characters seem very fleshed out very, very well. And I'm wondering how much I do this myself. I kind of cheat a little bit. I use real people and base my characters on them. How much of your friends and community found themselves in your book?
That is like such tricky territory, isn't it? When people and thousands of people know the people in our community. So as a reader, one of the first things I do is I read the author's notes, and that gives me some clues and some insights. And I took pains to acknowledge the two individuals that I asked permission from and channeled as real people. So that Getty character is pretty much 100% Bill. And the Woody Debris character is not. He's kind of a fictionalized neighbor, but he also was too strong a character in real life to try to change much. But everybody else, don't you find this yourself? You might have somebody you know as a core starting point, but when you read and when you know people and when you hear stories about other people, it's like this huge collection of little details. And I think what the writer does is it tries to create a new version of all the little bits and pieces that we know about how people can be and how they can behave. And one thing that I did, I had this book I got, I don't know, about 15 years ago, long before I ever dreamed I could actually write a novel. And it said that you imagine and create your characters and think what they drive and what they wear and how old they are and what their backstory is. And you can't, you know, you don't necessarily put that all in the book. You kind of pick and choose. But yeah, I did. Everybody's a little myriad mishmash of everything I know about everybody that I've ever known or heard of or read of or seen on the screen. If that makes any sense at all.
It's starting to. I think we all have to. Like, it's just like you said, we all have to. Like, we have to have a starting point. And then we can change it. It's our creativity and our imagination that allows us to change the people in our lives. Before I say goodbye, I do want to recommend to everybody to visit your website. I'm always fascinated when a writer is multi-talented. And Yvonne definitely is. She can work in many mediums. And I also got this feeling that we all bring something to our craft of writing, and you bring a visual sense to your story. The eyes of a painter, I guess.
Yeah, that's nicely put. That is one of the single most repeated comments that, and I couldn't put it down, which was lovely. And wow, you make this book like a painting. Yeah.
Well, it is beautiful like a painting. So once again, thank you very much for doing this interview. I know we had to work out our technical challenges, but I think we did it.
I'm just thrilled and delighted that you took the time to walk me through all that stuff and to ask me good questions and let me ramble on about them. Thanks, Eric.
You're welcome. And thank you, everyone, for listening. Very soon, we're going to be getting into awards season, but I'm going to try to squeeze one or two more interviews with some very interesting Canadian authors before that. Thank you.